Every community has a place where people meet and stories are told. The East Coast has stoops, the South has porches, and in Alaska, we have Arctic entries.
Here, Alaskans share their personal stories, funny, sad, and sweet. These stories are originally told at our monthly event in Anchorage. At each live performance, seven people tell a seven-minute-long true story related to the show's theme.
I'm Jason Brandeis.
And I'm Rosie Robards. Welcome to the Arctic Entries Radio Hour on KSKA Anchorage.
Our theme for this show is The Fierce Urgency of Now, stories of protest, disruption, and the fight for equality.
We'll start with a story from Sarah Evans. She's originally from Dillingham and says she spends most of her free time outdoors with her two dogs or sitting somewhere with a drink in her hand, obsessing over Alaska politics.
So I grew up in the Bristol Bay, which is the salmon capital of the world. My family first lived in Manicotic, which was a really small village of only about 60 people, and my dad was the only police officer in town, which didn't help my popularity. I remember my mom saying she was a very social person, and she wanted to meet friends right away, and she said to me, Sarah, we're going to go down to the beach and see if any of the local ladies needed help cutting up their salmon. And so down we went, and we get there. My mom introduces herself and asks if she can help. And then she pulled out her fillet knife, and the women all at once started busting out laughing at her. They thought it was like the funniest thing. And they said, what are you doing bringing a man's knife here? We don't use those. And they handed her an ulu and taught her to split fish the Yupik way. When I was about 8 years old, we had settled in Dillingham, which is the major hub of the Bristol Bay. And we were getting ready to attend the Noceum Festival, which is a festival. It's a festival that happens towards the end of the summer every year in Dillingham. And I'm going to pause for a moment to tell you a little bit about my mother. She was amazing. She was always dressed to the nine from head to toe. Girl was done up. She always had the most perfect hair, the perfect makeup, and her signature move was she loved to wear bright pink lipstick and was rarely ever seen without it. And even though Dillingham had mostly dirt roads at this time, she almost always wore high heels. So here we are at the festival, and we're at the fish splitting contest where women compete to see how many fillets they can do with these salmon in 10 minutes. And so I'm watching, and I see my mom go to sign up for this event, and I see all these locals like, who this crazy? They're laughing at her because she's wearing these bright pink rubber boots that she bought from a Martha Stewart catalog. The event starts, and before you know it, it's over. And my mom has annihilated every one of these locals. And everybody was just shocked. Jaws were dropped to the floor. And my mom's beaming. I've never seen her so proud. And right then, my complete heart fell in love with salmon. So not long after this, I became completely obsessed with salmon. And over the years, I've been a commercial fisherman, a sport fisherman, and an avid subsistence salmon harvester. I've also studied fisheries from a political and anthropological perspective. But my biggest salmon thing, like, that I'm just most proud of is the day that I made it to the fish cutting table. And that's because the fish splitting table is a very sacred place. It's where you have to earn a spot to be there. And it's where women get together and they tell their stories and they share knowledge and they laugh a lot. And I didn't know what the jokes were. So While other kids were sitting indoors playing video games or watching TV, I was pinned to the table in the summer doing the grunt work to get to the table, and that meant dumping the fish buckets and bringing fresh water buckets to the table and stirring the brine and putting fish in the smokehouse, you name it. And after many years, at the age of 16, I had earned my spot at that table, and it was amazing. Finally, I was in on their jokes and their stories and their knowledge. I could laugh with them, and I got it. It was great. And I thought of all of us. We are the queens of Bristol Bay. So later in life, of course, you have to go off to college, and I'm a few years into college, and I'm actually studying fisheries biology, and I heard about the proposed pebble mine for the first time, and I quickly read everything there was out there about the mine, and I knew if we didn't get back to Dillingham and start fighting this mine, we're going to lose our way of life. We're going to lose our salmon. So at the end of that semester, I packed up my things and I moved home. And my community and many others have been helping us fight this mine for over 10 years now. And we haven't given up and we haven't lost hope. And we've had a lot of ups and downs and even some great times along the way. Like once, you may remember this, a few years back, the Alaska State Fair gave us the green light to finally have a Wild Alaska Salmon Day. And so my girlfriends and I had come up with all these ideas that we want to happen at the fair, and one of them we thought, oh my gosh, like a fish print table where kids can paint fish, and we print it on a shirt, they get a memento, and their parents get a break from their sugar-ridden children for the next half hour. And so the night before we're heading into Anchorage, we are going over everything and making sure that everything's together. When we realize, oh no, like none of us have any whole salmon for these kids to parent, we've already processed them and put them away in our freezers. So we're like, no problem. We're going to get up super early and do sport fishing and catch a bunch of these fish. But you all know how that worked out. Ain't great. So we do manage to catch two silvers before our plane's about to take off and we head into Anchorage. And on the plane, we're like, no problem. This is Alaska. We got this. Like, we'll figure it out. But sure enough, we didn't. And keep in mind that we're a bunch of bush rats who are in the big city trying to find our natural habitat, which is water and salmon. And we finally get a tip that there are some creeks out in Girdwood that have fish spawning in them. And so we're like, this is perfect. So we drive out there. By the time we get there, it's pitch black dark. And we jump into the creek and manage to actually catch a bunch of humpies with our bare hands. And we shove them in a trash bag. And we head back to Anchorage, and we shove them into the mini refrigerator in our hotel room, and we're like, all right, time for bed. So we wake up the next morning, and our room smells god-awful. It is terrible. So we bravely open up the fridge and open up the bag, and it is just full of spawned-out, disgusting, rotten humpies that we didn't see in the dark, and we're like, oh, no. So after putting our massive brain power together, we decided to go buy some herring at New Sagaya's for the kids to print. And, you know, the event ended up going great. It went off without a hitch. Everybody had fun. The queens have pulled it off. And it was just a great event. So in closing, I just want to say that, you know, the reason that I'm not giving up on my fight against this mine is because I know that we have to. We have to be out there protecting Alaska's most precious resources, which is our clean air, our clean water, our fisheries, our wildlife, and our people. We deserve this. And also, I want to ensure that future generations can always have the ability to find their way to that fish splitting table and earn their right and become queens. And I know if my mother was still alive, she'd be standing right here next to me in her big high heels and her one-of-a-kind bright pink and no pebble mine t-shirt. Thank you.
That was newish Alaska resident Sarah Evans, and this is the Arctic Entries Radio Hour. During this hour, we hear Alaskans tell short, 7-minute stories about their lives.
Nettie LaBelle Hammer is a lifelong Alaskan who moved back to Fairbanks after what she describes as a brief period of misspent youth in Berkeley, California.
I spent most of my young childhood dreaming of becoming a ballerina. But by the time I was entering 9th grade, I knew I wanted to be a scientist. I did not know that a girl was not supposed to have that dream. When I was a senior in high school, I was given the Science Student of the Year award, and I was interviewed by a local newspaper. The reporter asked me, among other things, what I wanted to be when I grew up, and I said, a scientist. She laughed and said, "What happens when Mr. Wright comes along and doesn't want to be married to a scientist?" And I was puzzled, and I said, "Well, he's not Mr. Wright then, is he?" As a senior in college, I spent a lot of time in the physics lab. This was because the required classes of math and science had labs associated with them. And then there were the other classes, the ones without math and science. And then I had a whole list of labs that I had to do in the senior lab. And it was basically a list of experiments that I had to perform and show that I understood the basic principles. And it was a little bit more complicated because I was growing human by that time. So in my last semester of my senior year in college, I was about 8.5 months pregnant. So I had to wear a lead apron and carry a Geiger counter because of the kind of labs that I was working on. So I kind of stood out, the only woman, the only pregnant person, and the only person with a Geiger counter. So one day, a professor who I did not know came up to me in the lab, and he said, "When you're done here, you need to come see me." So I did. I went to his office. And he was seated. I walked in. He did not offer me a seat. I was about 8.5 months pregnant. I'd been on my feet about 12 hours by that time. And he said, "Why are you here?" "Well, I'm pretty used to absent-minded physics professors, so I said, 'You called me here, sir.'" And he said, "No. Why are you here? Why are you at Berkeley? Why are you in the lab? You don't belong here. You should be home taking care of your family." I had nothing to say. And as he barraged me with insults and questions and insulting questions, I remember looking down at my huge belly and never feeling so large and so small at the same time. And still no words would come. And he finally asked me, "What do you plan to do when you graduate?" And I said, "I plan to go to graduate school." And he said, "Not with your grades, you won't." He didn't know me, and he had pulled my records. And yeah, I had a B average. And he said, "People with B averages do not get into graduate school, especially not a woman." And at that point, I had two main objectives: one, to get out of that room, and number two, to get out of the room before he saw me cry. Somehow I kept going. I passed my senior labs. I graduated from UC Berkeley. I took the tests that were required for me to be admitted into graduate school. I gave birth to a beautiful baby boy who's here tonight. Thank you. And then I got into grad school. Yeah. Not one, but two. And I had to decide where to go. But I was having a really hard time trying to decide where to go because I was steeped in the sense of failure. And it was my husband, who is Mr. Right, by the way, who said to me, "How do you feel that a physics degree from one of the top three schools in the nation, with an above average GPA, yeah, B's are above average, how do you think that that is a failure? It looks like success to me." And I had to concede that there's some logic to that. So we gathered up our family and we moved to Fairbanks and I enrolled in the space physics graduate program. Now it turns out that getting an advanced degree in space physics while raising two small children is not as easy as it sounds. So there were days, but worse, there were nights when I just wanted to quit. I had been up early in the morning, getting the kids up, getting them breakfast, getting them to school. I get to work, I go to class, I do my homework, I pick them up, I take them to where they want to be, I give them dinner, I put them to bed. I'm back at work and I'm working on my homework. I look up, it's midnight. I'm exhausted. And I just want to quit. And I knew I could walk away from a dream because I already had. I don't wear a tutu to work. But I could not let that bastard be right. I couldn't let him be right about me, and I couldn't let him be right about science. Physics is not male. So I kept moving forward, and I realized afterward that while he was trying to make me fail, he actually gave me the fuel to succeed. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you'll permit me, I'd like to introduce myself. My name is Dr. Nettie LaBelle Hammer, and I am a scientist.
Dr. Nettie LaBelle Hammer, thank you for the story.
On this hour of Arctic Entries Radio, we're hearing stories of protest, disruption, and the fight for equality. Our theme is The Fierce Urgency of Now.
Our next storyteller, Anchorage resident Gabriella Olmos, has published 11 books and is currently the editor of Sol de Media Noche, Alaska's Hispanic newspaper. Here she is on stage at the Alaska Center for the Performing Arts.
Hello. I am a Mexican. I was born and raised in Mexico City, and I love my country. Mexico is a place with really beautiful beaches, with amazing pre-Hispanic sites, with lovely little towns scattered throughout the country, and with adorable people. And, well, I was a writer over there, and that took me to Guadalajara Book Fair in 2014. I was giving reading of one of my most recent books called I Dreamt. I had written I Dreamt in 2011, calling for peace. This is a children book written for the children facing violence in the narco war in Mexico. So after I wrote this book, I started reading this book and giving workshops on peace to different kids throughout the country. And I always arrive to these workshops and ask the kids, "Have you ever experienced violence? Do you know what violence is about?" And I heard the most horrifying stories you could ever imagine. I heard, for example, the story of an 11-year-old girl who was with her babysitter, and she suddenly heard a gunshot, and another gunshot, and another gunshot, and it was a crossfire, and she and her babysitter just hid in the closet and hugged their to comfort themselves and called the girl's parents, don't come, this is really dangerous. And I heard also the story of a group of 10-year-old kids who were playing, heading to a river, and there they found a beheaded body. And I always ask myself, why? Why on earth these kids in such an early age have to have those memories? And how would they thrive in a country that is failing to explain them what is happening, what is going on? And with these stories, I was at Guadalajara Book Fair with the intention of telling my story, these stories, and reading my book to other different audiences. And I was there online, waiting to get inside the building, and I was heading towards the launching of a book, and the line was long, and I was just there being patient when a woman came and pulled me out of the line. She was around 25 years old, and when thinking that she was somehow related with the event I was heading to, I followed her without questions, and we ended up in a tiny space, and there was a group of people dressed like soldiers. And I have to explain this. In Mexico, corruption has made its way through. And when you face people dressed like soldiers, they could be real soldiers, or they could be people dressed like soldiers, or they could be private security dressed like soldiers, or they could be narcos dressed like soldiers. So I was really scared. And I was brave enough to ask, why am I here? And then the head of that group of people came forward and say, because you are making propaganda. And he pointed at my ID badge. And then I saw that I was carrying there a poster that, when folded, read, "We are missing 43. And this deserves an explanation. "We are missing 43 is the slogan for a peace movement that has been held in Mexico. In southern Mexico, there were 43 students from the teachers' college that were heading to a demonstration in Mexico City, and they were in the buses, and they were kidnapped. And those 43 students just never made it back home. And people blame the army, and people blame the government, and people blame the narcos. But the real thing is that we will never know what happened with those 43 students. And 43 doesn't sound like much, but those 43 students have given faces to the 250,000 missing people in Mexico through the narco war. And 250,000 missing people mean 250,000 widows and 500 orphans and millions of mourning people. And such is the humanitarian crisis that we've been living through in Mexico in this century. And I was there in front of these guys, fearing that I would be disappear number 44. And I'm telling this very calmly, but this was not calm at all. I even got injured. They dislocated my shoulder, and I was so scared. And I just look at the ID badge. This was a poster. Everybody knew there that I was involved in the peace movement. So someone gave me this, a couple of visual artists gave me this poster. On one side, it had an image. And on the other side, it had a poem by a very well-known Mexican poet on those 43 students. So I look at it, unfolded it, and tell them, "Officers, I am not making propaganda. This is poetry." And as the literature teacher I used to be, I read line by line the poem to these people. And I explained the poetry in each line. And at the end, I told them that poetry is not a weapon, that poetry is harmless, but that is the only resource we had left when we had nothing. And that was what Mexico was the only resource that Mexicans had. And after that, I told them, okay? I am a very well-known writer, and I was heading towards the launching of a book, and there would be 200 people waiting for me. And those 200 people, sooner or later, if I don't arrive, would start looking for me. And they would eventually arrive to this place. And you know, I will tell them that I'm stopped. I have been stopped because I have a poem. And I don't know if you would be able to stand such ridicule. And then this guy said, let her go. She's just a writer. And I left as fast as I could. And I was scared. And I was full of fear, and I was crying, but I was alive, and I was safe. And I arrived very late to the book launch, and I just said that I was just stopped by the military, and I'm just here speaking about the power of poetry. To the people who don't believe in poetry or in art, you think that that might not make much. But I know poetry can save lives because it saved mine.
That was Gabriela Olmos, and you're listening to the Arctic Entries Radio Hour. Our theme is The Fierce Urgency of Now, stories of protest, disruption, and the fight for equality.
We'll break now from stories to hear some music by Fairbanks artist Emily Anderson, who's accompanied by Kevin Worrell and Eric Rogers, both of Anchorage.
Up at the stars, can you name the constellations? Can you find Venus and Mars? I'm sipping bourbon with Orion. Cassiopeia's at my door. She keeps arguing with Hercules. Hell, if I know what for. Do you think knowing their names makes you feel any less small? Do you think knowing the distance helps you contemplate the fall? So many people walking fast, staring blankly at their phones, 'cause it's so much easier to live inside a world that you can hold. Inside a world that you can hold. Oh, but if you look up, the universe is not so far away. I've been thinking about space. What is it you see when you look up at the sky? Do you see imagination or burning cities in the night? I'm hopping fences with old Pegasus. Ares is sleeping at my feet. The seven sisters went out dancing. Oh, dance, won't you dance with me? Do you think knowing their names makes you feel any less small? Do you think knowing the distance helps you contemplate the fall? So many people walking fast, staring blankly at their phones, 'cause it's so much easier to live inside a world that you can hold. Inside a world that you can hold. Oh, but if you look up, the universe is not so far away. Yes, if you look up, the universe is not so far away. I've been thinking about space. Catch a glimpse inside their life, then for fear of looking like a weirdo, you quickly turn away and walk on by. So have you stole something holy, and you pretend you didn't notice. There are no pictures on the mantelpiece, or they weren't fighting with their boyfriend, 'cause he forgot their anniversary. Like rotten dead leaves and old Kenny rappers and a Power Rangers figurine. Like rotten dead leaves and old Kenny rappers and a Power Rangers figurine. It was green. Felt like you were being lied to, but like a Polaroid, the picture starts to fade, trapped inside a tiny frame, like forgetting someone's name. So you read Kerouac on the train to make the city feel far. Far, far away.
Thank you.
I've been scared of letting go, scared of saying no, scared of living. I've been trying to find my way, searching for a name I believe in. And everybody talks too much. And I don't know what I want, don't know what I want. I just wanna be enough. I just wanna be enough. So hold me, oh, hold me, oh, hold me till the light grows dim. Oh, hold me, oh, hold me, oh, hold me till the light grows dim. I've been hurting and confused, trying to find my muse, trying to find my place. I've been lost in my hometown, streets I knew so well, feel like strangers somehow. And everybody talks too much. And I don't know what I want, don't know what I want. I just wanna be enough. I just wanna be enough. So hold me, oh, hold me, oh, hold me till the light grows dim. Oh, hold me, oh, hold me, oh, hold me till the light grows dim.
Emily Anderson came down to Anchorage from Fairbanks to share those tunes with the Arctic Entries audience. More on her music at emilyandersonak.com.
Back to stories. Next, we'll hear from Kokai Nosakire, who attended the Million Man March on October 16, 1995. Since that day, he says he's dedicated himself to addressing social injustice, sometimes using very interesting means to do so.
My name is Kokai. I'm the best there is, the best there was, the best there ever will be. And I'll be like that for life. If you don't believe me, ask me again, I'll tell you. I come from the dirt. 1330 Nel China. For those who happen to be listening to this nationally, that is a neighborhood in Anchorage, Alaska. I want to tell you a story about how someone with no money and no votes was able to affect public policy. In 2008, I was working at the Food Bank of Alaska as the food stamp outreach coordinator. In 2009, it comes across our desk in the legislature that the bills, Willikowski and Stoltz, were engaged in a Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader battle over $1.9 million. Now, because the budget was like $3.4 billion, we kept looking at it like $1.9 million. What are they fighting over $1.9 million? It was about school meals. It was the gap between what parents could pay and the federal government could reimburse. It was $1.9 million. Now, Willikowski was the lowly lawmaker, and Stoltz was the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. In 2009, Willikowski, following the rules, puts forth the school meal bill, and Stoltz sits on it. In 2010, he brings it back up again, and Stoltz sits on it. Bills expire after 2 years. So bravely, Willikowski puts it forth again in 2011. I do a letter writing campaign, and Stoltz, you guessed it, sat on it. So I apologized to the children of Alaska and said, I know what to do, and next year I'm gonna do it. Now, the left side of my brain is Minister Malcolm X, the right side of my brain is Ross Bob Marley. So I gave, when the session got started, I did a press conference that January, and I told Stultz, that he had until Bob Marley's birthday to get back in contact with his humanity, or I was gonna come down there on hunger strike until he gave up $1.9 million. I had to tell my plan to my parents. If you ever have this task, please give me a call. I have some advice. I got their blessing because it was their life that I was putting on the line, and then my mama told me that I had to consume at least 100 calories a day so that my muscles would keep firing and I would sleep properly and everything else like that. And I was like, okay, 100 calories a day. I get down to Juneau. It is February 6th. Food Bank of Alaska is lobbying for the next week, so I tend to hold back, and I don't show up. When I do show up after 7 days, Wilikowski's like, you've been here 7 days? You have not eaten in 7 days, and we don't know about it? You need media, all right? So we start working on media. I am able to get protest in Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks, not once, but twice, all on the same day. So I had 2 days where there were three protests going on in different cities, both days. Then day 14 comes. You start losing a lot of weight after 14 days at 100 calories a day. You also start getting a little scared. And you start asking, is the message getting across? So I started going to the committee and sitting in the committee, ice grilling Mr. Stultz with Sikhs sitting in lotus position in white. So it was beautiful television. And Bill Stultz sat on the bill. Day 28 is coming up. I call my political friends and they come up with the brilliant idea of community gardens. So they put forth a bill with community gardens and add on $1.9 million to cover the school meals. Stultz goes for it. We cheer. Kokai fasted for 28 days and lost 43 pounds. Yeah, it was kind of rough, man. But I say that to let you know that our elected officials are human. And there are 5 steps to political power that you and I can take, even if we don't have a lot of money and we don't have a lot of people. The first one is vote 3 times in a row. The next one, write an email to an elected official. Make a phone call. Show up at an event and then shake their hand so you stop being a number and you become a human being. If you happen to be able to make a donation, that helps too. And now working together, you and I can make the United States of America the best there is, the best there was, the best there ever will be, and we'll do that for life.
That was Kokai Nosakire, and this is the Arctic Entries Radio Hour on KSKA 91.1 FM Anchorage. I'm Jason Brandeis.
And I'm Rosie Robards. Our theme for this show is The Fierce Urgency of Now, stories of protest, disruption, and the fight for equality. In case you hear a story you'd like to share with a friend, all the past Arctic Entries stories are available for listening on our website at arcticentries.com, as well as through iTunes and SoundCloud. You can listen to this show in its entirety at alaskapublic.org.
It's time for our last storyteller this hour. Over the years, she cultivated her poetry, creative writing, and MC skills through contests, published works, and open mics. Here's MC Mahogany Magnetic.
Oppression is worse than a grave. Better to die for a noble cause than to live and die a slave. Yeah, I had to have my theme music going on. So yes, I am MC Mahogany Magnetic. End of August 2017, my sister, you know, gets me and is like, yo, I need help. Let's go get this cabinet for some people she bought on Craigslist. So we go over there, you know, we'd already purchased everything. She's talking to the lady who owns the cabinet in the house, and her husband is there talking to his friend that lives across the street. And I'm just there like, whatever, you know, let the transaction be done so I can go home. So the two men stop talking to each other, and the man who owns the house, the husband, comes up to me to shake my hand and is like, hey, man. I'm like, I'm not a man, I'm a woman. And my sister's like, yo, she's transgender, but he wasn't getting it. You know, so he's like, but your voice is so deep. I said, well, there's a lot of women with deep voices. Besides, I have on this skirt. You know, I have these beautiful nails and I have this wonderful black lipstick. Don't you know this motherfucker here? Grabbed my face, twisted my hair from side to side and said, I can't tell your face apart from your lipstick because you're black. I moved back far away as I could, trying to get away from him, but he kept coming at me, talking about prove you're a woman, lifting up my skirt and everything. My sister was there with me, and she saw it all go down. We just got in a truck, and we hopped, and we got away from there. You know, and we talked about it all night long and everything. And then I woke up the next day, and I'm like bawling out of control. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I am not going to be a victim. I'm just not going to do this. And I was like, I'm untrusty of the police. I mean, a lot of people are, you know? But I said I need to file a report anyway because that is where one of the issues lies here for transgender people here in Alaska, is that there is no record of all the injustice that's taking place because people don't go down and file complaints with the Human Rights Commission and all this type of jazz. So nevertheless, I call the state trooper up and everything, tell him a story. First thing I tell him is, hey, I'm Mahogany Magnetic, I'm female, I'm an African-American transgender woman. He was like, all right, cool. Well, I'm going to have to conduct a little investigation, and I'll get back to you. I'm like, all right. 4 hours, you know, go by. You know, he calls me back and says he did his little investigation and stuff, but it was more like a he said, she said thing, and that he wasn't going to do anything but write a summary because it's a non-reportable crime. I'm like, what the hell is a non-reportable crime? You know, so I'm like, whatever. And he misgendered me twice on the phone. The first time I corrected him, the second time I corrected him again, and he apologized. And then it dawned on me, if he is using the wrong pronouns while conducting an official investigation, and he's going over there talking to those people about me using the wrong pronouns, well, that changes the dynamics of the situation. So I'm waiting on his report all week long, calling all over the great state of Alaska, talking to the different troopers, just randomly. Yo, what is a non-reportable crime? What's a non-reportable crime? What the hell is a non-reportable crime? Don't make no sense. I mean, I talked to everybody, headquarters and everything. So by the end of the week, the lieutenant calls me. He said he listened to the whole conversation on the dispatch or whatever. So me and him talking for like 40 minutes go by and stuff, and he apologizing for what, you know, this police officer misgendering me. I said, but that's not the problem, dude. It's shoddy police work is the problem. I need a fair investigation. That's where I'm at. I can, you know, this misgendering thing, yeah, it's screwed up, but I can get past that, but I can't get it past you doing a shoddy investigation. So he asked me to tell him everything that was involved. And I named off all the people I don't know their names, but, you know, ran it off. And he's like, oh, I didn't know there was 5 people there. I'm like, mother, I've been talking to you the last 45 minutes, and you said you spent 30, you listened to the first half of the tape. That's the first thing I said when I called in on the damn phone. You know, so I'm like, oh my goodness, you know? He's like, well, okay, well, I'll go back and do another investigation. I was like, yeah, please do. Please do. But I was so worked up over it, and it hurt me so freaking bad. I have bipolar disorder and PTSD, so I get all kinds of fucked up when stressful happens to me. And I was like, and I have to deal with it in a positive way. And so a friend of mine told me that there's a strange kind of relationship and bondage, and some type of power that comes in it. So I'm talking to my sister, and we're sitting outside. And I said, what do I need to do for some damn justice around here? Chain myself to a motherfucking tree? So I chained myself to a motherfucking tree. Sure enough, I went over there to that courthouse over on 11th Street or whatever, under the cloak of darkness and everything. Got myself on that tree before they even saw what was going on. I had all my Wonder Woman gear on, and I had a blanket to cover my chain so they wouldn't see it right away, because I needed to make sure my press conference took off first, you know? And you don't know how it's going to go down with the police and, you know, what all that could be, so whatever, you know? So I'm on the tree, and people, you know, talking to me and everything and stuff, and I'm like, you know, the officer said to me, he's like, yeah, you just one person here, you know? I was like, no, I'm not one person. I may be one person chained to a tree, but I have a whole army of people with me on my team all the time. You don't have to understand. The mindset that I was in, I didn't think about food. I didn't think about whether it was going to rain or not. And I didn't think about the fact that my ass was going to hurt from sitting on the ground for 12 hours. It was ridiculous. But people was coming in, bringing me food and everything, you know, and stuff. And, like, my plan was just to be on that tree until the police take me off or until I die. You know, I was like, it's going down that way, you know. And I'm all about civil disobedience or whatever, and pushing that envelope as far as you can take it. And I'm like, there ain't no real laws against chaining yourself to a tree anyway. Like, what the hell? So nevertheless, like, 2 o'clock came, it started to rain, it was cold, none of my friends was there anymore. I wasn't getting any more, like, likes on Facebook behind it, people were paying me no attention. I'm like, I'm done. I am not gonna be on this tree all damn night. Hell no. I figure I get off at 6 o'clock. You know, since I started at 6, I end at 6, that's 12 hours. For Wonder Woman, that's a full day's work. Consider the average citizen puts in 8 hours. So, it was time for me to get off the tree, but you know what, right? If you know Mahogany Magnetic, you know I'm like absent-minded and everything. So it was time to get myself off the chains or whatever, but I was so hell-bent on being in the chains that I forgot the combination. So my friend had to run to my house or whatever, come back with the combination and take me off and everything. My BFF, she came, picked me up, took me to her house or whatever, let me chill out over there and stuff. And as soon as I walked in, like, I'm in a creative writing program at UAA, so one of my friends, Kohars, he calls me up. He's like, Mahogany, don't ever chain yourself to a tree again. You need to be writing. I'm like, yeah, you got a point. And then a few weeks later, my BFF, she comes over and she still sees my chains there on the floor while I left them, you know, when I came in the house. So she's like, you need to get rid of those chains. I was like, no, I won't, because I don't know when I'm going to need them again. It's been real. Peace, love, and hair grease.
That was Mahogany Magnetic on stage at the Alaska Center for the Performing Arts. This has been the Arctic Entries Radio Hour on KSKA Anchorage. To hear these stories again or to share them with friends, visit arcticentries.com or alaskapublic.org.
The Arctic Entries website also has information about upcoming themes, live shows, and details on how you could tell a story.
We'd like to thank our storyboard and the storytellers for this show, all of whom are volunteers, by the way. The proceeds from our shows are donated to a local social services nonprofit. Information about this is also on our site.
Thanks to Anchorage's own Supersaturated Sugar Strings for our theme music. This show was edited at the Alaska Teen Media Institute by Kendall Stormo. And this has been the Arctic Entries Radio Hour on KSKA Anchorage. I'm Rosie Robards.
And I'm Jason Brandeis. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to hearing your stories.
Where will we go? What will we be? I want to be yours, but I want to be free. What will we do when times get tough? Yeah. provide light or play from the rough. I love the start of new things to come, and I love your lips, what I give me some. But we fuss and fight when things go wrong. Will we laugh and sing every day a new song?
We'll just have to see what will be, will be. We can swim or sink in our new beginning. Oh, I'll just let it be. No more inquiry, darling, I'll need no more reassuring.
Things are looking up, you're the best of them all. Will I keep my word, would I have resolved? Eat a little less pork and be nice to you all. Don't need to know what the future stores. Just need your touch, who can ask for more? End of this year, will my face look the same? Will we fall in love or just fall like the rain?
We'll just have to see what will be, will be. We can swim on the same.